following is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO and, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall.
Episode 45 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Today, joined along with University of Dubuque head wrestling coach John McGovern and world and Olympic champion and legendary college wrestling coach Dan Gable. We are talking rule changes today, but before we get into the NCAA rule changes for 2017-2018, we're going to first ask, first Coach McGovern, you've got a good addition to your staff that was just announced. Lucas Malmberg, a four-time All-American and a two-time Division III champion, is coming to your staff at the University of Dubuque, and how excited are you for that?
Really excited. I think it's going to be a great impact for our wrestlers and our program, and it's a philosophy of what we're trying to do at the University of Dubuque, which is build men that can succeed on and off the mat. So I'm excited about adding his staff. It's been great working with him so far.
Coach Gable, you like enjoying retirement and enjoying your time fishing up at the cabin up in Minnesota. Got anything to report in terms of record catches or things of that nature?
That's all I'm about, record performance. So yeah, I could tell you, just like every other fisherman tell you, all these fishing lies. But you know what? I actually am getting ready to go up there. And so I'm getting ready to break the records. But I had a warm-up. I just drove up for a quick day up in northeast Minnesota just about a week ago up in Lake Vermilion, and just fished for like 8 hours with a guy that took me out and caught like 27 walleyes. Now they weren't that big, but they were tasty, and it was a good warm up for the next 2 or 3 weeks, where I'm heading up to Walker, Cass Lake area, and fish Leech Lake. So with my grandkids.
Yeah, I'll be up near Aiken for vacation about a week after we finish this particular call. And if you're listening after the fact, we're recording in July, mid July, as the Junior Nationals are finishing up here in the year of 2017. But as we get to our discussion now. On July 14th, the NCAA Wrestling Committee and the Rules Appropriations, all the mumbo-jumbo, the committees that put the rules together, for lack of a better term, the Rules Committee came out with several recommendations or passed a couple recommendations regarding some rule changes. We'll talk about those on this episode. First, we'll skirt through the ones that really don't make a whole lot of impact on the sport. We'll have some of the technical ones with Coach Gable and Coach McGovern in terms of weight management, and then, of course, the danger zone. With respects to Kenny Loggins. But first things first, we've got facial hair. And Coach, being on the 72 Olympic team with a guy named Rick Sanders, you kind of know a little bit about the facial hair in terms of wrestling. Do you think this has any type of significance for college and the collegiate wrestling overall?
Well, you know, you might explain exactly what the rule is just because, you know, I might not be 100% updated on that just from the standpoint I read it a couple times already. But you know, I do believe that there's a certain amount of respect that you allow the competitor as long as it's not going to be in the way of his opponent. So,
yeah, it's a half inch growth. Basically, again, this falls under the safeguards, which is why headgear being optional, that did not pass. Headgear is still required, but basically, it's so they can still see through the facial hair, no more than a half inch thick. So they can actually get a proper skin check to be done. So guys that don't have to constantly shave every single time, you know, some people can have to shave each day. Some people don't have it take them 2 weeks to grow any type of beard. So.
Yeah, no, I think that's fine. You know, I just think that if you get it too long, they're going to use it and pull it and bite it and whatever G Mills did to it one time. But you probably not follow me on there. But
no, I don't know. I don't know the Mean Gene story there.
Yeah, he bit a beard off of I think it was an Iranian after he pinned him, and I don't know if they got in a little trouble there, but they let it pass. And but anyway, no, I think anything that is appropriate from looks and not going to be in the way of his opponent is fine. That's fine.
Coach McGovern, you've got to deal with this, as they've had razor blades and fingernail clippers throughout every locker room and every weigh-in in America the last umpteen years. How's this going to impact just the general cleanliness of the weigh-in area?
Yeah, I suppose it should help. And is this kind of in line with the world FILA or United World Wrestling with beards in that direction? I mean, I don't know who's going to measure the half inch, but obviously they don't have to be clean shaven, so that helps. But you know, I don't know if they're going to get a measuring stick out there, but I guess it allows flexibility for that area. I don't think it's a bad thing, because if they're going to make the...
Yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with in anything that United World Wrestling is doing, because they've allowed beards forever. I mean, as I mentioned, Rick Sanders, back even before I was born, beards have always kind of been a thing internationally. So that one, I don't think has a huge impact.
That seems like it makes it a good thing then, right? It prepares the wrestlers what they can do at the Olympic level, like get it in line with the highest level, I would think.
Yeah, and I think the one thing also that's brought up with the skin abrasions is if you're shaving constantly, that opens up the skin for more potential skin-to-skin contact with, mm-hmm. you know, scratching surfaces that could lead to more skin infections. So this could actually curtail some of the facial skin infections. But again, in the grand scheme of wrestling, not a super huge rule change that's going to impact a whole lot.
I like it.
Moving forward, one thing, now this next rule, I'm going to preface this, I don't like this next rule, and it didn't impact a whole lot until about 10 years ago when we started seeing it, and that is that open tournaments are now allowed to have high school kids enter them again. And I'm going to paint this argument my way before I let you guys into it. Working with the NWCA when I was coming through with the weight management stuff and doing the rankings for all these years, you're looking at these guys coming to tournaments to get matches. And then you get high school kids that were starting to fill out the brackets. It's like, okay, I travel all this way to get matches for my qualification system, and I got to wrestle three high school kids. And we spent all this money and I got one countable match. So, I understand there are things like the Midlands that would allow like the elite level high school kid in. I'm not against that. I just think that we saw a situation with East Stroudsburg Open about 10 years ago where I think half the champs were high school kids. And yeah, they were good. A lot of them were on that somewhat elite level, but it seemed to be overrunning the college opens and the purpose of why, especially with the weights, the RPI situation the way it is. So first, Coach McGovern, D3, you guys don't have to hit this as much as some of the big tournaments, because the high school kids aren't entering a D3 tournament. They're entering the D1 opens to see where they're at. So again, I'm not for the large grouping of high school kids that are entering open tournaments. We've got freestyle for that. But just let me get your take on high school kids now being eligible to compete. But again, their matches do not count for season record forms.
Yeah, we covered that in our last conference call actually yesterday with the NWCA. And Jim Fallis and NWCA, they were saying Division One, those coaches were kind of leaning towards not against it, and the Division III coaches, at least all of our regional reps, were opposed to it. And the way it sounds is they bring that forward at the coach convention in August, and by September, based on that feedback, they can make changes. So there's kind of some hope that the feedback from the coaches would change that rule and not allow that one to go through.
From a sports perspective, an overall sport, do you think that there could be allowable exceptions, like the year we have just the stud high school kid that enters the Midlands? Do you think there's room for that exception, or do you want to say, no, we're against it all totally?
Well, I mean, I guess they asked Colot, and Colot said no, and he was one of those exceptions at the time. So, you know, I think what you're talking about for the benefit of the college wrestlers and the RPN, those matches, even though you're right, I mean, it's kind of fun to watch a Colot story come in at the high school level. He was opposed to it. So I think the coaches are thinking more maybe about their wrestlers, but there may be a few outliers that want to see that, and there might be a few college programs that want to see that. But I think overall that was consensus from the D3 coaches and the majority of the Division I coaches.
Coach Gable, your opinions on the rule change?
Oh, well, you know, I'm not going to. I'm always wanting to make progress this way and that way. But I would say my definite philosophy is stay at your level, and then because you're going to have plenty of time at that next level. So, you know, that's just kind of way I've been all the time. Even some of the great ones that have moved forward and really showed they could do pretty well. But for me, it's like I look at Dave Schultz, and I think Dave Schultz went to Tbilisi like three or four times. You know, and I think he went a couple times in high school maybe or something like that. And it took him till like his fourth or fifth try to even win the tournament. I think it got in his head, you know, early on. And I think he went there thinking, I don't know if I can win this, you know. And if he would have went there after he, you know, he was a good college wrestler, and I think he would have had a better chance. But, you know, everybody's got their own. But I keep it simple. Stay in your own category.
Next rule change not going to affect a whole lot unless we get to that tiebreaker situation is, and when we get to the 30-second tiebreakers, the wrestlers had the options of top or bottom. They could not defer. They could not choose neutral. Now they can choose neutral, which in case if you're down a point in that second half and you're like, no, I want to choose neutral versus conceding a point. Coach McGovern, I kind of like this. Again, not going to impact a large swath of, you know, events, but it is going to impact, you know, every match that there is. It could come down to this, okay, a strategic move. I like the option to take neutral in the tiebreaker. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exciting, and watching takedowns is exciting for the fans. So and it allows the wrestler that's good with that skill set to be able to, you know, show the strengths, because basically you're saying if they're both even, they want to see who's the better rider. But you know, that allows the guy that's good in the feet, not just top bottom, to if he can score there, yeah, for sure, he should be able to earn the victory.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious. I'm for that. That's not a. Yeah, you should be able to. I always wondered why they couldn't do that. So now we're doing it.
One thing that is also entering, and these next two rules kind of go hand in hand, is there is now a maximum of 6 matches, and forfeits don't count against the limit in terms of competitiveness. And there's also a mandatory 30-minute rest. This mainly seems to impact the large open tournaments where they're just trying to get as many matches through as a day. I think where we're going to see now is these opens that have one bracket are going to go maybe a freshman sophomore bracket or a gold silver. John, I know you see that out in the Midwest with some of these open tournaments and very even tournaments, Coach Gable, that are named after you that aren't even in the state of Iowa, have the various tiers of tournaments. I see this as a benefit because, you know, you're going to get a guy losing early. At the high school level, you probably can see kids go through and lose their first round and win 7 or 8 back to take third in a day. But I'd say, for lack of a better term, the scrub quotient is a lot less at college wrestling. So you're hitting better athletes. And once you get later on in the day, more risk of injury. So this one seems kind of like a no-brainer. Coach Gable, start with you in terms of match limit being 6 and then the 30-minute rest between bouts.
No, I'm not going to argue about this one. You know, it sounds pretty good to me. I like that 30-minute rest, and I think that 6 matches probably is enough. But you know, we're always going to run up against something that's going to backfire. But it's not a bad idea.
Yeah, and again, previously the rest time was a suggestion. It actually now is mandatory in the rule book. Coach McGovern, as somebody who's got to take large rosters to various open tournaments, and sometimes you have that open division and you have that freshman sophomore division, sometimes you don't. You know, you've probably had experiences where you've had a heavyweight sitting there battling back, and he's the last guy in the gym, and it's about 7 of the day.
Yeah, that sounds like a good rule. And overall, you kind of wonder too, like if it'll. Which, you know, at the Olympic level and world level, they're looking at making a 2-day event versus 1 day because of those backside matches that you talked about. Some guy might come back right away and the other guy had rest where the other guy matches. So sometimes you wonder if the NCAA is impacting, maybe Coach Gable, do you feel like NCAA, the United World Wrestling looks to the NCAA ever, or is it the NCAA kind of looks to the United World Wrestling, or do you feel like they're just totally two separate age entities, like affecting each other? I think it's a good rule, but just one note.
I would say I would say that usually UWW doesn't look to the NCAA. That's my opinion. They're worldwide, and I think I just don't think they're that concerned about it. I think we should be concerned about UWW and look at what our highest level is and making some changes. And I think that's what we're going to talk about here in a little bit. But so I would say that the rules committee, the NCAA, you know, should actually, you know, look at the total sport and where the highest level is. And that's us looking at what's needed to be. And, you know, I'm not so sure that we do that as much as we should.
All right. Now, the next two are, one is slightly more significant, and then we will spend more time on the biggest rule change. The next one is the drop down count, where the wrestler is dropping down to the knee, and they're still calling. They're going to let that position finish if the defensive wrestler is in a scramble situation, actually trying to score. So if they're turning in and actively trying to score, they're going to let that count go, and then we'll call the stall if nothing improves. So it's another bit of a gray area. And what is a wrestler doing to try, if he's mule kicking away and there's the stall count, or if he's turning in? I guess it protects the defensive wrestler here from having his action stopped because there's a five count. So, you know, offensive guy's holding onto the ankle, he's getting a count, guy turns in and is trying to finish, but the action is stopped because the top man gets hit for stalling. I like this. It allows the defensive man to say, okay, I have options more than just try to mule kick out, or if I've got a situation where I think I can score here. Coach McGovern, your thoughts on how this is going to change things up from the top and bottom position?
I think it sounds good. I mean, we should see what your Coach Gable thinks on it.
Yeah, Coach, your turn.
Yeah, I think that they're concerned, and so they're still working on these positions. And because it's not an automatic perfect situation, because sometimes if you like shoot a move and you get caught in that move and you can't move, if it's neutral, you know, it's just, you can't move. And if you try to move, you're going to lose a takedown. So if you're riding or something like that and the same position happens, it really should be the same rule, but it's just not. And so I just think that we still need work in this area, and I am happy that they are, and do realize that, you know, we're not perfect there, but at least we're trying to make it perfect. So I'm okay.
All right. Now here comes the one. You ready, Coach? Everybody loosened up? We're going to be discussing this one here for a little bit. And I'm reading this one from how Andy Vogel at D3Wrestle.com has kind of explained it. I think it's the best way to put it in layman's terms, is the biggest new rule change is neutral danger. For wrestlers that are neutral position, stopped with his back at less than a 90-degree angle, there will be a count. The official will get to three and will somehow signify that you're in danger, you're in a danger zone, you're in a danger position. And if that wrestler doesn't move out of that position, we will now have 2 points awarded to the guy initiating that position, or the wrestler who is not essentially on his back. This is going to be different for coaches, for athletes, for fans, and most specifically for athletes who are prone to scrambling and have used the scramble to find their way to a stalemate versus a scramble to initiate offense. So we're getting a situation, you know, Ben Askren was notorious for this in terms of, you know, being able to basically, and on the offensive minded way, as he would have his foot basically stepping on a wrestler and the defensive wrestler's on his back. But what defined control? So now we've got, okay, one, hey, you're in a danger zone. One, two, three, there's two takedown. And if you hang there out, you're going to get hit for near fall. So I don't know who wants to take this one first. I'm going to just open it up, because this one has the opportunity to really change the sport of wrestling in terms of how it is competed on the mat.
You want me to take it, Gable, here?
Coach, yep. Gable, go for it.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I pros and cons, but I'm going to go for it. I just think that the pro is that one guy's hanging on for his life and the other guy is actually probably administered the offense. He's very close, but it's just not being called because of some hanging on, and it's going to probably keep people from going there as much, or they're going to release quicker and it'll go to more of a scramble. But I also like it because I think, again, it goes towards our USA wrestling effort where you're not throwing yourself to your back and hanging on, because, you know, if you do that in international wrestling, they don't do that in international wrestling because they lose points. So, you know, I think that's another good thing. Now, the only thing that I do not like is I like to keep things simple, and we are getting confusing, and we are getting confusing, but we have to weather the storm a little bit here. But the thing I'm really trying to explain here is that now we have a two-point, two-count near fall. Now we have in college, we have a four-point, four-count near fall. Now we got a three-count, two-point takedown, possibly, or maybe reversal, whatever, you know, that type of thing. And so it is getting a little bit confusing. And then if you go to high school, I don't think they're doing this. None of this what we're talking about. They still got the 5-count 3-point near fall and the 2-count 2-point near fall. I don't think they have the 4-point. I don't know if high school has anything that we're talking about today. So now we're getting two sports, high school wrestling and college wrestling, with a lot of different types of calls, and it's just really confusing. But I'm not against, because I can see where we're heading in a direction where guys are just hanging on for dear life and wasting a lot of the match. I mean, it even happened in the national finals this year at, I believe, 184. You know, it's just there was too much time, you know, from a defensive point of view that took away from the match towards the end in an offensive maneuver. But again, everybody has their own. But I am concerned about really not knowing what's going on from our fans, because we need our sport to be able to grow in that way, and we need our sport to be able to people to understand it. And so I know there's a lot of changes. People think they can come up with answers, and we give them a try. But what about just simplicity? What about just the official making the wrestlers wrestle instead of, you know, afraid of getting kicked out of officiating because you made a stall call? There's nothing wrong with making wrestlers wrestle. And at one time we had that, we've gotten away from that. And, you know, I think that would actually be better than any rules that are difficult. But if we can come up with some good rules, I'm for it. And I think in this particular situation, let's try it.
I think the impactfulness here is on wrestlers who, again, they're not using it as a counter to score, where you can see a guy hit a leg pass really fast. Next thing you know, he's got the reversal, or he's taking that offensive attack and defending it with the leg pass and turning it in to a takedown of his own. It's the, all right, we're in a scramble, we're rolling. All right, I'm posting on my head. You've got my leg. I'm like staring up at the ceiling, and you're holding me, and I've got and there's nothing. It ends up being nothing. I think Jesse Delgado unfairly gets hit with this a lot, but sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. He hit these positions a lot and forced a lot of stalemates. So I think people are pointing to him as one of the catalysts for this, because, you know, he was just horribly tough to score on. Basically because of his scrambling ability. But also, Coach McGovern, I'm going to point this to you, because you've got active wrestlers in your room, and kids are going to try with the old rules. They were trying leg passes and scrambles, and it really didn't hit their skill set, and they'd end up just kind of getting stuck in bad positions, building bad habits. This rule will quickly have an opportunity to eradicate bad habits from guys that really probably shouldn't be investing in the time it takes to master the funk, so to speak.
Yeah, and I agree with Coach Gibbon. I like what he said about NCAA should be looking to United World Wrestling and Olympic level, because our college programs, you know, we want to keep growing the Olympic sport, make it a core sport. And if you got two high schools and colleges doing two different rules, and then fans having to follow Olympic wrestling, I know it has different rules, but then Greco and freestyle, if we could at least make, I did a clinic this morning at Dubuque Senior High School, and the high school coach, I told him about the new rule changes. Like, how do those even made? Like, you know, they don't realize like how easy it is. You send in rules to the NCAA rules secretary editor and suggest changes. So college coaches can say, suggest changes that go in line with United World Wrestling. But then in terms of how they vote and agree on it, I think what Coach Gable is saying is it shouldn't be the marketing of NCAA wrestling, United World Wrestling. It should be the real Olympic wrestling, the real productive action and the real wrestling versus the busy action wrestling, almost kind of shaping it. So we should be leading more of that rate back. What Coach Gable is saying is real wrestling that people can understand and forcing wrestlers to have action. So I think this is going to force more action, go that direction. But like he said, I mean, there's different near fault counts for high school and college. I mean, that all that stuff, it seems like high school should follow the NCAA. The NCAA should kind of follow, try to go in line with the highest level and try and gear these wrestlers to follow, you know, the highest level wrestling. And that's where fans, you know, that's, people are watching Jordan Burroughs. People are following those athletes, and that's where we can grow our sport. You don't see that at the Olympic level with basketball having so many different rules. You know, a 3-point and a 5-point throw shot. You know, it's, people can understand it, so it, that seems to make sense. Seems like it's moving in the right direction for sure.
Yeah, and both of you guys, you know, living and coaching within the state of Iowa, there to me as an outsider, it doesn't seem like there's that much of a disconnect between the fan bases of the in terms of high school wrestling fans that follow college wrestling. But where I grew up in Virginia, we had high school wrestling fans. And at the time when I'm coming through, I couldn't name a single starter on a Division I wrestling program within my home state. And that time, at the time, we had 6 or 7 Division I teams. So I see where Coach Gable is kind of saying, okay, we've got different rule sets. I think this actually might even splinter the community a little bit more in terms of that disconnect to where, all right, I'm a high school fan. My son or nephew or daughter, well, daughter's freestyle, but my son or nephew or something is going into a tournament, and I'm only watching high school wrestling. I'm saying, what's this near fall for? Wait, why did he get a point for stepping out of bounds like that? Why are they wrestling on the edge? The differences between even something like the out of bounds can confuse the high school fan who's trying to get into the collegiate wrestling fan base. So, Coach Gable, what do you think? Beyond the rules, as we kind of get off on a little bit of tangent here, that the sport of wrestling, maybe from the National Federation of High School State Associations and the NCAA, can maybe work together and say, hey, we've got, you now we got two rule sets. How can we bring our fan bases together in terms of getting them to respect one sport or the other? Because just because you're a wrestling fan doesn't always mean you're a college wrestling fan.
No, absolutely. And I just think that it's like, okay, I mean, I hate to bring up politics, but, you know, politics is going nowhere right now from a standpoint of you got two sides and each side thinks they're right. And they're not budging. And one of these days they're going to budge, or we're going to become pretty damn divided, split. And we can't get much more, but I guess the Civil War, we're not there yet. But, you know, I just think that college wrestling and high school wrestling and UWW wrestling, the old FILA, you know, there should be some fine lines of continuity. And, you know, I think that we got to work on that. And I think it's the leadership at each area. In fact, the leadership of each area should have somebody on each committee. You know, that's just the way it should be. So they can kind of speak up at the time and talk at the time. Of course, it's tough to talk at UWWs unless you know multi-language, but a lot of people do. So that's kind of where I'm at. But I'm okay for trying to improve. You know, that's the big thing.
Now, we can go down this branch a little bit more, and there's some of the division as we talk about rules and how great the world team trials were in Lincoln in terms of its quality of wrestling and the excitement factor. Again, it was one style of wrestling. It was just men's freestyle, and it was about 6,000-7,000, whatever. I can't remember what the official attendance was. By comparison, we draw a huge crowd at the NCAA Division I championships for 3 days a year, and we might see, you know, the duels at Penn State or at Iowa or Oklahoma State that really draw pretty well. But what do you think is Coach Gable, I guess, the American's biggest issue with being more freestyle centric versus our, well, we're folk style, we're about control, you know? What can you say to somebody who might be like, yeah, you know, open your eyes a little bit and look at the benefits of the freestyle here?
No, I think absolutely. I love control, but I also love the ability to be able to know how to maneuver people so I can get better control. And so that's freestyle, and that's, you know, Greco-Roman wrestling. I mean, it's all about not so much control, you know, even though their ultimate's supposed to be pinning. And so they should look at that, because nobody hardly gets a pin. And so maybe they should get a little bit more control in. So, you know, I think that's real critical. But I don't know where we were going with this. What was the question again?
I'm just exactly trying to see, you know, trying to bridge the gap between maybe the stubborn American folk style purist versus those who are kind of saying,
right,
hey, let's be
so,
more freestyle.
So here's the other thing. Right. So here's the other thing. You got to remember, we have so many people involved in wrestling that are numbers at more of the beginning level. And as we go to the higher level, we decrease and decrease and decrease. So the people at that beginning level aren't involved as much with our world effort. They're not as, and that makes sense because they're volunteers. They come into junior high. They might even have clubs. You know, they just might be parents. And so, you know, they're probably not actively understanding what's taking place. So I just think that we need to push down to that lower level to where it's almost mandatory that kids can learn the different styles and the different techniques and keep it simple. But yet I know we're uneducated even there. So I would even say that in high school, how many high school coaches that are actually coaching the head coach at the high school are really involved with the world effort? You know, and I would say that there's probably a smaller percentage that are really the ones that are watching it. So, you know, and so we got a lot to grow, and, you know, we need that. But, you know, it's not that simple. We just got to get more organized. And like I kind of said, the politics thing can't be so divided. And there is, I know once I became a freestyle wrestler, I just learned so much more about being able to turn somebody on their back and being able to stay off my back. And so it actually helped me in a lot of ways, but I don't want to take the guy away from it that actually has maneuvers that he would have to eliminate. And that's the hard part, because we sometimes in our sport almost have like a model that this is what you have to do, and that's all you have to do. And then all of a sudden you eliminate so many kids that really don't do that but could do something else. And I don't want to eliminate anybody. I just want more numbers. And this is my first year involved with youth wrestling, as far as like going to practice quite a bit, following the junior high level. And I can guarantee you this. I shouldn't say guarantee, but the first year of educational wrestling, whether it be sixth grade or seventh grade, because there's sixth, seventh, and eighth graders, or there's seventh and eighth graders, but I guarantee that sixth grade class or that seventh grade class is where the ones that are first year classes is where we're losing 50% of our kids. And it's a lot because we're not in tune with bringing them along. We're not in tune with making sure they have a very good experience. And I think it's a quick fix, but it's one of these things that you'll have to get some different type of mentalities with the coaching level. So, you know, I just think that we do have a chance to make our sport even better. And that's what we're talking about today. We're actually talking about making our sport better with rules and regulations. However, if it becomes too complicated, nobody's going to understand it. So that's what we got to kind of look back on.
And I want to be fair to the folk style purist out there, because we have a great style of wrestling. It is entertaining. We get big crowds. It is distinctly American, much as we don't use the metric system here. We use our way of thinking. What are some things to flip the coin on the other side here, to literally make heads or tails of it? What are some things you think that international wrestling could use from American folk style wrestling that could improve their product?
Well, I think that they should understand that it's not just all about exposure, that, you know, they can pin somebody. You know, I mean, I do have pins, but I mean, it's really, I mean, you can take international wrestling and you can just say, okay, offensively on top, you're going to hit a gut and you're going to hit a cross ankle. And that's pretty much it. I mean, you could probably mention 10 to 15 holds on top that you can use in collegiate riding and pinning. It's probably, again, goes back to the 100 years of tilts, the 100 years of exposure instead of control. And so, you know, we could add a lot to theirs. Now, you can see a few guys. I mean, actually, I used more arm bars and near wrist pins than I did ankle laces or guts. I don't think I would have done a gut. And the reason why is I'm worried somebody's going to step over and pin me, you know, but there are guts that work, a trap darn gut, you know, that's one I would use. And that's very similar to a hip tilt. You know, there's different things that you can learn, but no, I would say that, we just sometimes try to make the sport too many rules. And that's one of the bad things that we're doing and talking about today. We're talking about rules instead of coaches coaching athletes to compete hard, officials refereeing matches to make sure they compete hard. That to me is more effective than all the rules in the world. So that's where I'm at.
And again, from an American standpoint, I think a lot of our fan base is worried about if there is a shift more towards freestyle, is having we're us being Americans not having control of the rules. We can say what we want about the NCAA, but they're still an American organization. Whereas you know, you don't want little Johnny down at Waterloo West sitting there going, oh, the rules have changed because some guys in Switzerland decided to change them last night. So I think that's where a lot of our fears come from, based on the old feeler regime. And coach, do you think that's valid?
No, I really think that our sport, if you learn our sport really well, scramble ability from a, you know, not, you know, from underneath position, because it's very similar to scramble ability, just countering takedowns. But I think if, you know, you can apply that and you can be better at the UWW style. They just kind of limit themselves. We kind of limit ourselves a little bit here with scholastic and intercollegiate. And I think there's a combination there that, and there's a burnout factor. I mean, you don't do the same sport your whole career. You actually have another sport that's close. I mean, I think it's close enough if you just say, hey, I want to pin everybody. Well, you know, nothing wrong. I mean, if you pin everybody, and it doesn't matter what style. Or if to pin somebody, it means you got to put them on their back. So that's kind of like UWW, but you got to have not just a roll. You got to actually, you know, get a count or 1 second or 2 seconds. So there's a lot to be said about motivation. There's a lot to be said about having actually a little bit different rules. But I don't think in America, between high school and college, that we should be spending a whole lot of time having to have a high school kid adapt to a college wrestling it either, because we already lose too many, and if it's much different, we'll lose that many more.
Now shifting gears to the last bit of rule changes, which are more administrative, and Coach McGovern, I want to bring you back in on this, because I know this is something that you've been discussing within the Division III coaches community is the elimination of the February 15th certification date, minimum lowest allowable weight to get to, and certification can now be up to the first day of competition. From your vantage point, what impacts do these have on the coaches, and why do you think these are positive rule changes?
Well, they're positive for the student athlete because it's a safeguard, and so the 1.5% weight loss helps the athlete that maybe came in second semester, needs to make the weight descent and wants to compete. But we've had a case where a kid could make 198 by February 15th for one weight cert, and he came in second semester, so he had to keep pretty certain. By the time he got through the weight cert, he couldn't wrestle the competition. That safeguard. And then the other thing is, when they first had that system, there was a glitch in their computer, and it wasn't updating. And February 15th, we had an actual tournament, and it changed for an athlete. And so the NWCA doesn't have to have their. It just allows the athlete to know 1.5% is safe any time of season, whether it's in November or January or February or March. It was always a safe descent, and it doesn't make so much work for administration to have to, including the NWCA, to have to monitor it. It's just a good safeguard. And so, and then the other thing with the weight certification, that's safe to do any time of the year as well, right? If you have a certain administration where it's harder for their administration because they have fall sports to do their weight certifications in the fall with all the fall sport athletes coming in and are getting registered, and so they need to do it later because of their athletic training staff needs with fall sports, but it happens during the season. Once again, that hydration test is for educational purposes. They picked the 1.015 as that was the one that was closest to 80% accurate, but it wasn't because they felt like that was the safest place for the athlete to be. That was a kind of a random number for an educational purpose, but the weight certification can happen any time of year and be a safeguard. So I think a lot of the coaches will feel good about this. I don't know of anybody really cheating on that. So the stiffer penalties in terms of people being caught with, rubber suits and diuretics, I don't know if we need to go that route as much as being a safeguard for student athletes on a 1.5% weight loss any time of year, and then a weight certification that could occur any time of year. But now they're saying it has to happen before the first competition, which at least is a move in the right direction. So better for the athletes, better for administrations, and a good move in the right direction.
And in terms of the penalties, I think having gone through working with the NWCA when all this was really, a lot of it was being developed, and seeing how coaches would constantly call me, hey, I think this might also stem the number of phone calls that the NWCA and the weight management people have in terms of like, hey, when do I get it? It probably just creates a lot less paperwork even in a world that's full of paperwork.
Correct.
Now, one more thing that this is actually probably the least impactful, although it might be the most fun if you're a fan of Iowa wrestling, or if you're not a fan of Iowa wrestling, and it is the challenge flag is now a brick, very similar to United World Wrestling, if not inspired from it. And the first thing people thought about is Coach Gable. The first thing they thought about was Tom and Terry throwing bricks across the mat. I mean, it's kind of hard not to picture.
Well,
and I say this in jest, by the way.
You really have to go over and you got to make sure it's not a brick, because they might want to throw a brick. So you got to have a brick like over and a bit, actually picks it up.
Yeah. A brick like figure, a square taped cardboard, not quite damaging. Yeah. I could see any. I mean, I think I saw a coach in Fargo this past week take the brick. It was Pat Owens from Idaho. He took the challenge brick and chucked it, and it went clear across the mat, almost, landed right at the base of the table for the mat chairman, which is clear across the raised mat in Fargo. So you bring up making sure it's not an actual brick. This could lead to some real fireworks in Carver Hawkeye. So maybe if it is a real brick, that could change. I mean, that might get some television revenue. I'm kidding, of course.
Well, that brick, when that brick starts bouncing across the mat, people are going to like it. They're going to like it.
Yeah. Versus
just because it's entertainment. It's entertainment. Hey, you kind of skipped over it, but they did jump from a penalty for like weight loss activities. And my question there is it went from like 1 to 8 matches you set out or something like that. I mean, what if you have one good guy in your team and all he's doing is trying to do something that's actually good for him? Because right now, you know, they've kind of just taken the non-educational route and it's just went the penalty route for this type of activity. Well, you know, and wrestlers of all people, you know, should be able to utilize recovery methods. Now you're going to say sweatsuits and all those things aren't recovery methods. Well, you know, I might argue with you a little bit about that. I'll fact a lot. But I would say that if you only have one good kid on the team and he really wants to be as good as he can and he wants to use the methods that our high-level athletes use for performance, not for weight loss, and we're not letting them do that, then all of a sudden you lose a kid for, I don't know what the, if it's you get caught, you lose 8 duels, but what if it's only 6 and you got the tournaments? I mean, do you still get to wrestle?
I think it's 8 events. I don't think it's 8 duel meets. I think it's 8 events on the schedule. And now there's gray area there. Is that count opens that you may or may not have planned on going to? I mean,
yeah, but what if you caught the last day and there's only the tournaments? You done?
Yeah, I mean,
so you don't get to go to the tournaments. But what if my whole team is, that's the one thing about our sport. Sometimes you can have 10 guys that wrestle, but you only got one good guy. I mean, I remember Mark Chiarella won the national championship 3 times for the University of Michigan. And at that time, you know, they didn't have the team performances they wanted, but they had Mark Chiarella. Mark Chiarella gets caught doing something. You can say, well, he shouldn't do it. Well, you know, he wants to win too, and he's watching the Olympic level guys, and maybe they use heat and cold and stuff like that, which, you know, it's about education. It's not about elimination. So let's just go eliminate all the cars in the world, you know, and because they're killing people, which they are. And, you know, it goes back to that 20 years ago when these 3 kids and we lost their lives, but they were on ephedra, a drug. So, you know, it's yeah, there's a lot of education that needs to be out there. And if people and rest and coaches would just think about the education aspect. So for me, if you take my best kid and you just wipe him off the mat, you know what? You've just wiped my program off the mat. And you know what you've done? You wiped the sport off the mat. So there's a lot of things that we have to get some coaches to actually start thinking more about the sport instead of just thinking, well, I don't have that, have the ability to do that. And they got all the resources. So, you know, this is a good rule to keep people from recruiting, have a recruiting tool, you know, or something. But anyway, it's a sore subject.
I agree with
you. You know, I'm glad that they kept that. Go ahead.
Well, I agree with Coach Jason because it's the educational component. I think most coaches wouldn't be for stricter penalties for this. Maybe penalties, like Coach said, for what actual cause, you know, ephedra, or maybe the creatine, but those studies show it, but it's not, it isn't the sauna. In fact, there's a lot of studies that sauna is therapeutic and it helps a lot of things.
A lot of studies. You know, guys, there's doing more than a lot of studies.
Yeah. So from an educational standpoint, he's right. That's helpful for the athletes to know how to use it effectively. And they're given penalties for stuff that really wasn't the cause of of these new rules anyway, which was ephedra, what coach knows when those 3 deaths occurred. So it seems like the penalties are going back to making sure there's just more administrative people, you know, checking on the wrong, you know, just not the right focus for sure.
Well, and one thing I want to bring up too is for those who are maybe unfamiliar with international events, I'm at the European Junior Championships a month ago and I'm walking out and it's like bathrooms that way, sauna that way. I mean, and this is in the facility. So,
right
there, you
so
know,
that's where it should be.
You know, yep, there are saunas at certain events. Within the freestyle calendar, there's a club that I know that drives theirs around. We may or may not know which one that one is. And I'm also looking at this fact that these wrestling rooms, these new wrestling rooms that are being built in college wrestling, they have one sometimes attached to it. So this is where I think with the sauna discussion, there's almost, it seems like a gentleman's agreement that nobody's going to blow the whistle on another coach because their guys are using a sauna because at a dual meet, they're probably going, hey, where's your sauna? And they're like, it's over there. So I don't think
or the other case is you go to these tournaments and you go to a YMCA and these high school kids are in there, but wouldn't you rather have it supervised than kids having to
That's an absolutely fantastic point. Fantastic point. And again, I mean, I'm
at least supervise it and teach them how to do it healthy knowing that they're gonna they could go find their own place and it could be unsupervised.
You know, the other thing that you talked about was the headgear, which I could not believe they were going to throw the headgear out, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, UWW actually should probably look at the headgear rule. I mean, did you ever see the ears on 99% of the UWW athletes?
Yes.
I mean, they're beat up. I mean, guess what? We got females coming into our sport more and more now, and we have to have them. Do we really want them beat up and ugly? Or, do, you know, I mean, the guys, maybe they can handle the ears, but I don't think we should even have cauliflower ears. We should have to actually be able to protect to keep that. And I'm for mouthpieces, mandatory mouthpieces. So, you know, it's two simple things that I think for the sport, for moms and dads at the beginning level, that they know we're looking out and protecting these kids. And that's one of the reasons why they probably are saying that, well, we won't get them, you know, weight loss and we won't give them, you know, hot saunas and stuff like that. But that's not a part. All that stuff is separate from for performance. But we're too, sometimes we just go about it in the wrong direction. And because of that, we, you know, we're getting held back. And I just wouldn't want my team to lose its best kid because he wants to be good.
I think we've hit several big points here. Coach McGovern, going to give you some final thoughts as what you think about what we've talked about today, the future of the World Wrestling Resource, and how the summer's been with your camps and clinics through World Wrestling Resource.
Yeah, well, yeah, thanks. It's been a great summer in camps in Missouri and Wisconsin and one coming in Texas, and just been good, but it's been great this summer trying to inspire kids at all levels. And I just really appreciate what Coach Gable brought to this call and you know, where we're trying to go with, you know, wrestling overall. And, you know, when he was talking about youth wrestlers coming in and how that's the biggest drop in that year, and, you know, my son now is at a YMCA and starting to do swimming. And I'm telling my son and my nephews that Coach Gable was at a YMCA swim club, and that, you know, when we were talking about these rules, what Coach Gable was, he likes control and he was a competitor, and competitors find ways. Doesn't matter what the rules are, but, you know, he was doing two sports and really competitive at it. But, you know, I think sometimes the parents want them to, you know, be the best right away. But like Coach Gable said, at that level, but then try to have our overall level be that highest level and shoot for that direction. But, you know, this is Coach Gable saying headgears and protecting ears and different things. And so I think we should listen to some of the leadership in the country. Coach Gable is a leader. And I think that, it's great to have him on our World Wrestling Resource podcast and his wisdom and insights. And, you know, penalties for coaches maybe not protecting their students' ears or head or concussions maybe more than if they are in a sauna or doing something that really a lot of those kids are going to be doing anyway. And like they go to the higher level, they're going to find in Russia or other countries that their competitors are using that as an advantage against them. I mean, they're using the hot cold rotations, you know, highest level athletes. So they should know how to be educated in the process of how to do it correct. So just my final thoughts on that. Thanks, Coach Gable, for being on the call.
Yeah. Hey, no, hey, thanks, John. One thing else that's really crucial for our sport is, and it hardly ever comes out, we are skin to skin, and one of our biggest issues always is skin to skin and what kind of situation happens because of that. You know, we have hygiene. We have to be extraordinarily hygienic, and there's been whole tournaments shut down rarely, but over time because of all of a sudden some skin infection and stuff like that. So for me, you know, that's even a part of the hygienic recovery cleaning process for a wrestler or a football player. And you know what that is? That is actually showering, sauning, because temperature kills those bugs. You know, not like necessarily a steam room where it only gets 108, But a sauna that gets 160, 170, those bacteria actually die in there. That's part. And for me, I never had an issue. Most of my athletes never had an issue. And the reason why was because we were actually utilizing resources that are good for our sport and for everybody else's sport. I mean, if you go to Finland, you go to their Olympic Training Center, every dorm room has a sauna. Every dorm room. They have their own private in their Olympic Training Center. So, you know, it's just part of the deal. But anyway, I'm just trying to help our sport. I'm trying to get it to where we have 1 million kids out. And by the time they start high school, we have 300,000. I'd like to see getting 1 million kids out. And my immediate goal would be, let's cut that in two. Let's have 600,000. And I think that's reasonable. And I think it goes back to the sixth grade and seventh grade having not very good experiences, throwing them in a hopper where you don't even know who's wrestling who. And one kid's getting beat up every time and not having a good feeling. I mean, you can be on a team and get beat up and you still have a good feeling because his bad feeling is shared amongst everybody else. But in wrestling, it's not shared. And it's a process, but we're getting there, but we're not getting there fast enough. So that's my bottom line.
And also with the skin protections, want to throw a shout out to Defense Soap, who has been proudly supporting this program for 2.5 years now. And Guy Seiko and his crew have always been big on the World Wrestling Resource and the World Wrestling Resource podcast.
Absolutely.
So thanks to Defense Soap for their help. And for Coach Gable and John McGovern, it's been Jason Bryant. You've been listening to the World Wrestling Resource podcast.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.